Interesting. Thanks. Hi everyone, I'm Annie and I'm an addict. It's nice to be back in this room. You know, this is my home group for, I think maybe 10 years or something like that when I lived in London. So, and I've been secretary here and made the teas and part of the building in days before. It used to be a really big meeting, you know. So I suggest if you pick up any newcomers, bring them along, you know. That's how the meetings grow, is bring someone else with you all the time. I've come with a little gang tonight. We've come from Ramsgate, where I'm situated now. And, you know, it's different. I've been down there for 6 years, and we've got a small fellowship, but we still work the same program, so we're the same. We joined at the hip, all of us, wherever you are. A little bit about me, because this is all about me, of course. Yeah, I'm an addict, and I've been coming to this fellowship since 91, and I've been clean all that time, which is a miracle. So it works. You know, I didn't go to rehab, didn't have those luxuries. I got clean in Australia, and I came straight into the rooms, you know, a mess, still clucking, and I went to my first meeting. And what I heard at that first meeting was just the safety of it all, really, I think, that people were talking about their lives, and I, you know, you could see that they'd been where I'd been, but they talked about their lives with an ownership and with self-love. And that's what kept me coming back, was these people that had been clean a little while, sometimes some of them a long time, but they talked about self-love and how their lives had come together. And at that time, my life was a mess, you know, like all using addicts. You know, we don't know which way is up when we come into these rooms. If I'm still going all right, we wouldn't come here in the first place, would we? You know, I wouldn't have thought, oh, I think I'll go into recovery. I never ever thought that. I didn't know what it was. I didn't know that it happened even. You know, I just thought you just used and died, really. Or maybe you stopped at some time. And I did have a go at stopping at different times, you know, when I was so ill or locked up or, not towards the end, I stopped a couple of times. And I went to Thailand in 89, and it wasn't in the main recovery house there, but it was associated with that. And I did dry up a little bit, but I didn't stop drinking. Alcohol had always been present in my using, and I didn't stop drinking. So consequently, when I went back to Australia, I, you know, picked up my usual drugs, which for most of my time was amphetamines, crystal meth. You know, I used to hit that up, burned your skin and everything, you know, but you just think, oh, well, you know, that's the way it is, you know, crazy. So I started mixing it with heroin because it softens it up a little bit, you know. And our heroin was pure white. I never knew about this brown stuff till I came to England. They were talking about brown, and I thought, I wonder what that is. I've missed something. Then I didn't want to miss anything. I was about nearly 5 years clean when I came over to England. And, they're talking about this brown, and I'm thinking, I wonder what that is. I'll have to ask someone. But, you know, like typical addict, you don't want to ask because they're going to say, don't you fucking know what it is, you know, or something. Yeah, so through osmosis, I learned that you were getting this dirty, mucky heroin, you know. And I thought, oh, I never had any of that, and I don't particularly want any either, you know. The years have gone by. But it's geography. It's all geography, you know. That's all that makes, you know, we're close to Thailand in Australia, so it's a bit different. But we all end up the same, no matter what colour it is that you put down your throat or up your bottom or whatever you do with it, you know, it's all, you end up the same, don't you? You're a mess. So, my using started young, you know, as soon as I could sort of look old enough to buy a drink, I did that. And this is in the 60s, probably about 63, maybe 64, something like that. I can't really remember. I know I saw the Beatles in 64, I do remember that. I bet no one else here has seen the Beatles. Yeah, me brush with fame, seeing the Beatles. And all the bands used to come out to Australia, you know, the Stones and the Who and Dave Clark Five, and all of them used to come out to Oz, you know. It was really good in those days, and we'd go and watch them. And I started to smoke about that, but the first time I remember being really ill was on board a ship, and they had this Panama Red hash, and I was really sick, you know. And I knocked around on the ships for years, and you could always get lots of drink and lots of drugs. It was really good. They were merchant ships, you know, that would come into Sydney or Melbourne, wherever I was, and the bar was open all the time, and you didn't have to pay. You know, it was good stuff. And each port has a pub right near, which is a seaman's pub, you know, so I always drank in them. None of that. This is real history, this you're hearing here. You kids, this is history, right? Because it don't happen now in the end of this shit. Ships don't stay in port like they used to in those days. And I ended up marrying a merchant seaman. That wasn't a good day. It wasn't a good day. Two, you know, crazy people together. But I have a beautiful daughter from that relationship. She's... I think she's 40. She was born in 71, so yeah, she's... You know, they're so old now, my kids. They're older than me, you know. So. I'll be 72 next month. So I'm a very lucky addict being alive at 72. It don't happen. I had Hep C when I came in, and I was sick, you know. But I deserve to get all that stuff, I suppose, with the lifestyle, and well, I don't know if you deserve it, but it happens, you know. It's runs with addiction. You know, I've been to jail, and I've been, you know, ill, and sold drugs, and sold my soul a long time ago. Don't think I'll ever get that back. You know, just all the normal shit that goes on, really, you know, which I don't have any regrets about it. It's funny that, isn't it? You know, all the dark things that I thought were the worst things that could ever happen to anyone, as when you're in the victim mode anyway, thinking about, oh God, I had to do that, or I had to do this, and I had to live with that bloke or him or whatever, you know. That's when you're in victim mode. And I didn't really have a lot of that when I came in the rooms. I don't think, anyway. I guess if there was someone sitting in here who was around in my early meetings, they'd probably disagree. But I don't remember having that so much. I internalised a lot of stuff. You know, you couldn't sort of... Emotionally unavailable is probably... you know, what I was all the time. I'd learnt to put that barrier up from a child with, you know, the way I was brought up. And I come from a real middle-class family, but there wasn't any free emotion. You know, you didn't get hugs or anything like that. But I don't think any kids did that were born at that time. Us baby boomers were all starved of love because we come from the place where... They weren't shown love particularly because their parents were Victorians. And so, you know, it's all changed, you know. I mean, I tell my kids all the time I love them and my grandkids. And I've got great-grandkids as well. Where, you know, so the world has changed. You know, listening to Steve and his background. And, you know, I've heard a lot of stories like that where things were really awful, you know, in growing up. Mine weren't awful. We had, you know, everything was there, but there was no love, really. I don't think they knew how to do it. And my mum and dad have passed on now, and next month I'm going to South Wales to meet my brother, and we're going to scatter my dad's ashes there. He came from the valleys, you know. He was a kid miner, and then the war broke out, so he had to leave and go to war. So their lives, when you're brought up with people that have been through that, are going to be different than people that maybe are around today, or how I brought my kids up. So I don't feel a victim of that. You know, it's about stretching the the canvas out and seeing what happened before, you know, to the people before us. And that has been a big help in my recovery of realising that, you know, all people have it tough, not just poor me, you know. So the addiction in me was there. It was just there. And did I catch it from someone? Who knows? Who cares? I had a bloody good time in active addiction some of the time, you know. It's a lot of fun. The 60s were pretty good. And we had a lot of good... Oh, I've just knocked the mic. Yeah, the 60s were good. You know, there were some nice clean drugs then and people were happy and we used to share our drugs easily and all that sort of stuff. The 70s, it became a bit more... The 80s was terrible. There wasn't so much money around the 80s, but no one would give you anything. You know, it just all changed. And so I did 3 decades of using. So I'm lucky to be alive, you know, because I used to mainline my drugs and consequently I got Hep C, of course. But anyway, you know the shit, you know what happened. You know, it happens to all of us. We all end up on our knees thinking, what happened there? And I got into recovery. I went to another fellowship in the beginning. There was no NA for miles where, like I'm talking about 300 miles or something, when I came in. And I started really going to NA when I came to London because they were plentiful. And I needed that identification, really, you know, even though I had drank plenty. Even then we had it's called the Travelling Circus Group, and we moved around, you know, it was, we'd all meet at someone's house and then get in cars and drive off, you know, for a couple of hundred miles to go to meetings. And I was telling someone before, that the mother of the little boy, that we used to put all the kids in sleeping bags along the wall, like they were like peas in the pod, you know, with buckets of Kentucky Fried Chicken, you know, because it would be like hours before we'd get home. So all our kids were used to going to meetings way back. And some of my kids nearly 40 now, and he was 11 when I came in. So he's coming here on his own right since then. But that's another story. That's his story. And they used to make cakes as well. And they'd have Alan on in one meeting, AA in another one, and Alateen in another one. And these guys, they were all cow cockies and that from the farms, and they would make cakes. And you'd go in and they'd be going, yeah, you put a bit of sugar in and a bit of butter, and they'd be swapping recipes, these old drunks, you know. It was great. And they'd have all these cakes and everyone was getting fatter and fatter and fatter. So I never even eat a biscuit in the rooms now. I've been there for years. You don't need to eat in meetings. They used to have fruit here, Dean. What's happened to that? Bowls of fruit we used to have in here. Just remembered it. So they were my early meetings. And then I decided, then I moved away from that area and I moved on a little island off the south coast. And the people that live there are always musicians or writers or artists or whatever, and it's very famous for penguins as well, little fairy penguins, Phillip Island. So I lived down there for a while, and then I was living with, I was painting quite a lot then and exhibiting my work and all that stuff, and I lived with another artist. And I was living there and I thought, I'm going to die here without, I've got to do something, you know. And my daughter was living here in England. And I was born here as well. I'm a 10-pound pom kid, and which probably obviously you don't even know what that is, but anyway. They used to get families to go out to Australia and the parents would pay £10 each. So we were called 10-pound poms. And you can't get into Australia now unless you're a millionaire, but then they take all the shit kickers in those days, you know. Everybody, all my family were out there. So They needed the grafters in them days. Now you could have had like 15 degrees to get in. It's gone all posh now, Australia. You know, it started off with convicts and £10 poms. Now they want millionaires. Typical, isn't it, you know? And, yeah, so where was I? Coming back, was I coming back here? Was I coming back here? Thank you. A bit of dementia sets in every now and again. I don't, where am I, you know? That happens quite a lot. I don't know if that's brain damage or just the fact that I'm bloody old now. It was nice when Steve said this young lady was being very kind, wasn't he? Yes, so coming back to England was, my daughter had already come over here, so I decided, I'm living with the mad biker artist, aren't I? So, yeah, I thought I'll go as well. And my son was 16 then, and he was sitting on a beach under a bit of corrugated iron with all the Koori boys, all the Aboriginal boys, playing a didgeridoo every day, you know, smoking big joints. So there's not a lot happening in his life. So I thought it would be a good idea to emigrate back to England. So got on a plane, I sold everything I had, and got on a plane and came back. And it was very weird. It was very weird. It's a very hard city to get going again in, I must say. You know what I couldn't find? You've got this thing called a national insurance number. I bet none of you know where you get it from. See? No response. We've even got comedians in Australia that talk about the national insurance number because it's like chicken's eggs or something. You just don't, you have to know where to look to get it. So I was paying emergency tax for about 18 months and somebody said, oh, you can get, if you get a national insurance number. Nobody knew where you got it from. I said, was it tattooed on your ass or something? You know, you must have got it from somewhere. Nobody knew. Anyway, finally I sort of settled into work and I got myself a flat. Crisis housed me. Gee, that was beautiful. You know, I'll never forget that, of actually having a... It was a hard-to-let flat in downtown Hackney, so you can imagine what it was like. I had crack houses each side of me, I had girls working, it was all, everything was happening there. But I had a little flat, I didn't even own a cup, nothing. And my son's running amok. But, you know, you start again in life. Just getting clean doesn't mean that everything's going to be rosy. It really doesn't. That's what I'm trying to say. You can hit more rock bottoms in recovery trying to get your life together. It's not all going to be kosher because you're now a clean addict. You still got to live, and living is one of our problems anyway, you know, of getting everything, the routine and working and blah, 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 all that stuff. And I was 49 when I came over here. So, you know, I loved all the clubs. I was going to Torture Garden and Slimelight, getting around like a dominatrix. I was young, I could do all that then. Yeah, I was having a great old time. And they used to say to my daughter, Jesus, what's your mother on? And she'd say, nothing. And they'd all be eed off their heads. I've never had an E in my life. And I was up dancing all night with all these great, you know, all the music and everything. It was good. I come from an island with penguins, for Christ's sake. I'm, you know, into London. So, yeah, it was good. And then I got bored of London. And it was Oscar Wilde said, when you're tired of London, you're dead. And I was 65 then, and I'd been working. I worked as a nanny in my last 10 years of being in London. And I worked with some really cool people. You know, I was very lucky and did lots of magic stuff with them. And then I went down to Broadstairs. My daughter, she's in Broadstairs. I got a flat in Ramsgate, did a transfer. You know, geez, how magic's that? You know, you wait 2 years for it, but I've got it. You know, I've got a nice flat. And I'm disabled now, and I get a car. I mean, Jesus, I get housing benefit, a pension, and a car. Not bad, is it? You know, I've got nothing, well, fuck all, but you know, I've got a roof over my head, I get a bit of money, and I get a car. I mean, life is pretty good, isn't it? I can't hardly walk, but you know, but it's okay, I've got this osteoarthritis. That's from sleeping on park benches, probably, or whatever I did. to deserve that. No, it's hereditary. My parents both had osteo, so anyway, it's not that bad. It's all right. And I haven't got hep C now. Joys of recovery, no hep C. I got the treatment about 13, 14 years ago now, I think it was. And that was horrible. Anyone going through it, I feel, yeah, you get all those nights. You only have to do it for about 2 weeks now and you get rid of it, don't you? We get to do bloody forever, injecting ourselves and all that, you know, on the trials. But I have gratitude for that. I have a lot of gratitude for my recovery. You know, it's... I do Buddhist chanting, and this week, I've only just started this, it's my new buzz, doing this chanting. I'm pagan, really, but I'm doing a bit of Buddhism thrown in. And we had a talk this month, was on gratitude. And I go with another member, and these ladies are talking about gratitude, and of course they don't know that we're in recovery, and we're talking about gratitude all the time in recovery, aren't we, you know? Or if you ain't, you should be. And so we're talking about gratitude, and there are so many little things that you could be grateful for. Like when we were walking here, someone in my little group mentioned when they first noticed the trees. And I remember that first seeing the trees, you know, when you clean and you hear the birds and you start seeing the cracks in the pavement, grass growing, voices of children, all sorts of wonderful things that have been blocked out for so long because we've internalised so much with our addiction. That we're so self-focused that we don't hear the outside world at all. Like, I certainly didn't, you might have. Maybe you were on different drugs to me, I don't know. I suppose, yeah, the drugs now might give you a bit more. I mean, when we were taking LSD years ago, it was supposed to open your mind. I suppose it did to a certain degree. They don't have that now, I don't think. Do they have it now? Is it still around? Second gummy. Yeah, mushrooms. I used to love an old mushroom. I eat mushrooms quite regularly, actually, but it's very, very different. I just put them in me. I'm vegan, so mushrooms is our life source. And they have been my life source before, but they were different coloured ones then in those days. Yeah, how much longer have I got to rabbit on, Dean?
Whenever you're ready.
Oh, my God. Don't indulge me, like, have I?
10:15.
Okay. What can I tell you about? What about we talk about the program? How we did this? How did we do it? You know, what we need to do when we come in is shut up. That's the first thing we need to do, is shut up. Because you know nothing. You don't know jack shit about anything when you get here. And so that's what is a good idea, is just sit there, sit on your hands and listen, you know. And sometimes you're going to get bored with what you hear, because they're going to go over and over and over about what their wonderful life is. And you think, might be all right for you, you old bastard. It's no good for me at this point. I'm living in city roads. We can't even live there anymore now. That's gone, you know. That's sad about that. It really is. But if you're living in some halfway house, that's pretty lucky, because they never used to have them. Chances are they won't have them in a few years either. So whoever's in them now, respect, because it's good stuff. But what you've got to do is listen, and you've got to find someone that you like, or don't like even, and say to them, gee, you've been around a little while, do you think you could help me? And that person will say, probably not. They're going to say, yeah, I'll help you. And you say, can I start the steps tomorrow? And they're going to say, no. And you're going to get really pissed off with that, because you're only a day clean, you know. And you're going to work it out between woman for woman, man for man. Always, always, always. Never give your phone numbers out to the opposite sex when you're around, ever, ever. We've had a lot of trouble down in our neck of the woods, so just bringing it up to London to tell you. The 13th step still exists, so we've got to stop it. Yeah, so you ask this person, will they support you and help you? And you go, they say yes,
And then you start ringing them up with all sorts of crap every day. And this person says, don't ring me up with all that garbage. I don't want to hear about your boyfriend or anything. It's you I want to hear about. Why do newcomers always want to talk about their romances? Why is that, you know? Well, because we were in a mess at the time, I suppose. I'm just thinking back to when I come in, bloody hell. And this person will help you and read the book with you, and you will write down what it says to write down, and you'll answer all the questions, and suddenly you'll start to feel a little bit better. You think, wow, this is amazing. I think I'll stick with this, you know. Or some people get an ego and think, I don't want to answer all this shit. Why should I answer all this? It's not my fault I'm here. It's me mother's or me father's or me ex-husband's or whatever. So you have to stick through that, and it's tough, you know. It's really tough. I remember doing my first lot of steps, and I hated my sponsor. It was a guy from America. He was lovely. But I hated him. He used to just annoy me. And in those days, of course, I was going to AA, and we'd go out to do a 12-step, and he carried the big book under his arm. I mean, how embarrassing is that, you know? But he was lovely. And he's about 40-odd years clean now. He lives in Louisiana, which is underwater at the moment. So he's only little, so I hope he's all right. he's a lot of years around. And, you know, he was a gentle guy, and his wife was in Al-Anon, so I had to do me fourth step with his missus. He said, I don't want to hear about all your smut, you know. So there wasn't a lot of people around where I got clean. Not a lot of women. As always, there's not a lot of women. There's a lot of women that piss off when they're clean after a few years as well, which is very sad. But there are still some women that stick it out. There used to be lots in this meeting, but anyway. I hope they haven't passed on or anything. Well, that's oldies.
I've got a relationship.
Oh, God. So you do all that stuff, and the days go into weeks, and the weeks go into months, and then you get your first year, and you're sort of doing it then, you know. You've cracked the code, I think, after that first year. When I did my first year, we went to this meeting somewhere else with the Travelling Circus group, which is still going today. And this girl said to me, congratulations on being a year. And I said, oh, that's really nice, and thank you. She said, it's good to hear you say something different. Because all I used to say, I'm fine, I couldn't say anything else, you know. I just had to fake it to make it all the time, because I felt too uneasy, you know, to say anything. I used to sit at the back of the room. We used to smoke in them days in the meetings, and I'd hang on to a fag and a can of Coke, drinking that, and, you know, that old thing of hiding behind something. And in Australia, you don't get to sit down like this. You get called to the front, like this one, really, to share. You have to walk to the front of the room. It makes you humble, they say. Makes you scared, I reckon. It did me, anyway. So, yeah, I'm in England for a long time now. 23 years I've been here. And I love living here. I love the fellowship here. I love all my sponnies, you know, my girls. They're good. There's one here today, and life's good, but I still need to come to meetings. I must tell you that. Even I'll be 28 years this year, but I still come to me meetings. I still do a bit of step work. I'm not very good at it anymore, I must admit. Well, I never was, but I've done it a few times. I've done 1, 2, and 3 so many times with newcomers that I'm sort of stepped out, I suppose. But yeah, I still do it, and I still try and be part of this fellowship, you know. I don't do what I, you know, all the stuff I used to do, but I don't have to, because you lot are here now. I don't have to be GSR anymore, or secretary at every meeting, or on committees, because you lot do that now. You know, when I come along, I didn't go to the convention this year, and it's the first time that I've missed.
And I just thought, I can't be bothered with all that stuff. You know, keep coming back, keep coming back. Yeah. I love it, keep coming back, but it's too tiring, you know. I must be getting old. And so I didn't go this year, but I was with you all the time. I knew what meeting you'd be on, and I knew where you'd be going and all that. But at night, I was happy to get in my own bed, you know, and not... It really wore me out the year before. So, yeah, I've retired from conventions now. And, yeah, I've retired from quite a lot of things, really, but I'm still passionate about recovery. And I hope everyone in this room keeps coming back, because that's all you got to do, really, is just keep coming back, doing a little bit of work, and bloody have a laugh. You know, we've been sad for a long time when we were sick. It was tough, it was dark. But now, you know, you can get better. You really can, but you got to work for it. Don't just, you know, just sit in your ass in here is not enough. It's, you know, service is important. And, you know, I'm saying I've dropped most of my service now, but I did do it. And you don't need us oldies to keep doing it anyway. How are you going to learn if we're all sitting, you know, in the chairs? You know, it don't work that way. So I haven't got anything else to say other than it's nice to be here and see, you know, a few of you I know, but a lot of you I don't know in here. And I hope next time when I come back, it should probably be in another year, they only get me down here once a year or something. Dean must have thought, geez, we haven't got anyone for Friday night. Better ring the old girl and put me down here. You know? And I thank you for that, Dean, because it's nice to come back to London, especially this meeting. And, yeah, keep coming back. Thanks.
Thank you. Thank you.